I knew that just from previous experience, tenants will pay for a nice place to live if they perceive value. To me, it is completely warranting of the investment because I'm really confident of the rents I'm going
to
get.
Welcome to Multifamily Deal Lab, where your host, Dave Lindahl, dissects recent multifamily deals done by his guests. Dave will extract what went right, what went wrong, and a number of key takeaways so your next deal may be more profitable.
All right, everybody, welcome to the Multifamily Deal Lab podcast, where we dissect deals. And today I have Fernanda and Odell, and they're actually going to tell everybody who they are, where they're from right now, and then we'll get into the deal that they did. So ladies first.
Hello, Fernanda Hamlin here from Chicago, Romeoville, Illinois, so a suburb of Chicago. Yeah, that's me.
Okay.
Full-time project manager, part-time real estate investor.
So we were just talking at the very beginning that if you're listening to this, you can't see her background, but she's got a background of palm trees and surf. I was like, that don't look like Chicago. The Chicago I know. Apparently, she just got back from Hawaii, which is beautiful.
Yeah.
So Odell, tell everybody who you are and where you're from.
Okay, I'm Odell Ward. I'm from, spent a lot of my time in Jackson, Mississippi. I've moved to Meridian, Mississippi, suburb of Meridian, Mississippi, which is on the east coast of the east of the side of the state. Work at UPS full time as a manager and doing real estate part time with the goal of being a full time real estate investor.
Awesome. And UPS gives like stocks, right? Stock options?
Yes, we do.
Do you have a bunch of those?
Yes, I do have some of those.
We've got several UPS employees inside of our system.
Okay.
And, some of them started to invest in their own deals and invest in other people's deals too, through those options. But I see Mark Schuler just joined us. Mark, tell everybody who you are, where you're from.
Well, I'm Mark Schuler, and I am from Seattle, Washington.
Awesome. All right. So let's go. I'm going to go to Odell and Fernanda. And how did you guys meet? Because Mark is actually the sponsor of the deal, and you guys are the ones that brought the deal to the table. So how did you guys form a partnership?
At UP 2018, we met.
Ultimate Partner 2018, yeah.
I think we've been talking before then. So
wait, who met who at 2018? You met Mark.
Well, Odell and I met.
No, you two, yeah. Yeah. Oh, so you two met.
Oh, I see. Sorry.
All right. So you met during networking? Like, did you were a group of people at lunch, or how did that work out?
I think he just walked up to me. I can't really remember. You probably remember better than I do.
Yeah, we were at one of the breakout sessions. And we just introduced ourselves. We exchanged business card. Well, I didn't have a business card at the time because I didn't get a chance to make up my business card. But Fernanda did have business cards. She had her cards made up. And I wrote my number and contact information on her card. She had mine and I had hers. So we met there in 2018 in Boston.
And then you decided that you're going to partner on some deals. So 48 unit deal.
Yeah.
And where is it?
Vicksburg, Mississippi.
Mm-hmm. 48 unit deal in Vicksburg, Mississippi. How did you find that deal and why did you decide on Vicksburg?
Well, one, it's my backyard. Vicksburg is about 40 minutes to the west of Jackson, Mississippi. So I'm very familiar with that area. Had a broker that I was had a broker relationship with, and he brought us a couple of other deals, and he brought us this off-market deal in Vicksburg, and Fernanda and I started looking at it and we made a tour out there to visit it. And it just looked like it was a pretty good deal.
So the broker brought you the deal. Was the broker showing you deals in other areas or had you decided?
Yeah.
Vicksburg, Mississippi, right?
Yes.
We had just, I'd done a podcast with a student a few weeks ago that bought in Vicksburg as well. Right? Isn't that the battle that turned the Civil War, wasn't it?
Yeah, Battle of Vicksburg, yes.
Yeah. Yes. All right. So that is that close to you?
Yes. We're from Jackson, Mississippi, it's about 40 minutes to the west.
Oh, okay. That's nice.
40 minutes.
All right, good. Brokey sends you the property package. You do the numbers and you think, wow, this one either is close or it works.
Yeah, it worked. And I was like, wow, it actually worked. And so then I started tweaking it and stress testing it and underwriting it every which way I could because I was like, this it doesn't happen like this. And it kept working.
What was the purchase price that they were asking?
They were asking $2.1 million.
Okay. And so the deal works. So next step is put an offer, right? What'd you offer?
$1.833 million.
Okay. And were there any outliers in the underwriting that you needed to ask about?
It was a quirky deal. So when I underwrote it and when I was trying to kind of get information from the seller, the property was owned by Vicksburg Housing Authority. And they just didn't have any information. Like, they bought it at that time. It was about 2 years prior. And yeah, they didn't have any information they could really share with us. So they couldn't help us with anything. So we literally had to dig into other avenues of information to really solidify that underwriting and those numbers.
So the broker gave you a set of numbers, but really couldn't back them up. Is that what you're saying?
That's what
I'm... We'll get into that in a minute. All right. So, So what did you end up getting the deal for?
We got it for 1.833.
So you offered 1.833 and then you got it for 1.833?
Actually, we got a concession at the end of the deal.
At the end, yeah.
What do you mean? So when you went into purchase and sale, what was the purchase price on the purchase and sale agreement?
$1,833,000.
Oh, it was?
Yes.
Okay, so, but then they wanted 2.1.
Yeah.
So you offered 1.8 and you got it for 1.8. Did the first thing you say to yourself was, damn, I should have offered less?
I did. I said, they accepted that like too fast. Yeah. I did. And I was like, but even at the 2.1, it worked.
Yeah.
So I still felt okay about it.
Okay. All right. Yeah. That's always my sentiment whenever I want to haggle a little bit. So does the owner. I mean, if you offered full price without some sort of negotiation, you know, like, yeah, you know, throwing everything in the kitchen sink along with, I'll pay you full price, but I want all this stuff too. You know, let them say, well, you can have a full price, but I'm not going to give you this stuff, or I'll give you a few of those things. Somehow you got to haggle. So both sides feel pretty good, you know?
Right.
Otherwise, both have buyer's remorse or seller's remorse.
I think they did, actually.
Yeah. You thought they had seller's remorse?
I think, yeah.
Yes.
They were kind of grabby about it, but it's a lot to the story. But yeah, go ahead.
Okay. So at what point did you think to yourself, I need an additional person into this deal? Where'd you meet Mark, by the way?
Our mentor group, he made a post about, hey, if you want to learn how I was able to pay my investors back in 12 months, their original investment, you know, and cash out and something you said, Mark. And I was like, oh, okay, yeah, I'd like to learn how to do that. And Odell and I both actually responded to that post at separate times. And we ended up jumping on a call with Mark, and he was one of the most happiest people for us that we got the deal under contract.
Yeah.
Like, his body language made us feel really good about that. And yeah, so he kind of just giving us tips on that phone call about how to handle the deal. But at that point, we had not even like really considered sponsorship at that point, talking to him about it.
All right. So first of all, I've known Mark for a while. He's one of the great investors that has come out of our system. He's just awesome. He's done a lot of deals. He continues to do a lot of deals. Yeah. And when he's happy about a deal, I mean, that's because the deal works.
Yeah,
because he usually has this pretty solemn face on most of the time, but it's good.
And he was calling us like, how's it going? He wasn't our sponsor yet, but he was checking in and asking and guiding us and mentoring us. And
so you had questions on the deal and you got guidance from Mark?
Yeah.
In the beginning,
It was from the very beginning.
Yeah, we didn't have a sponsor. We actually, Dave, went through, took that deal before we took it to Mark. We took that deal to 8 other sponsors.
Oh, wow.
And they all said no.
What was the reason they were saying no?
So let me take a step back to the purchase and sale agreement. At that time, end of July, we had just signed the PSA. What, a week or 2 weeks after we signed it, they extended the eviction moratorium. And Mark said, you better get all those people out of there, because they weren't paying it. Of the 48 units, 32 at that time were occupied, and about 9 of those tenants were actually paying rent and had paid rent.
Wow.
The rest hadn't paid rent in over a year. And Mark told us, don't do that deal unless you get them to sign an addendum that says they will evict those tenants. You'll never be able to get rid of them. They'll never pay. There'll be a problem and your deal won't work.
And evict them before the closing?
Yeah, we actually signed the addendum, like I said, about 2 weeks after we signed the PSA, and they signed it immediately.
Yeah.
No pushback, no questions asked or anything.
How long did it take them to get those people out?
It took me. They would not cooperate. They did not want to do the eviction. They did not want to pay for the eviction. They didn't have an attorney. So we said, we're going to pay for the, well, you can use our attorney. Our attorney agreed to facilitate the eviction. And between me and the admin assistant, it took us 60 days to get those 32 people out of there.
Oh, that's not too bad. And you didn't close until then, until they're out.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right.
We didn't. I don't know. Frame it correctly, Fernando. We did, you know, the addendum said we had up to 30 days after the final tenant was out of there to close.
Right.
We ended up, when was that? That was like last fall. Mm-hmm. We closed this thing in early March. And so we just gave us plenty of time to line up our financing, our insurance, everything. So,
wow. All right. So I got a question for you now, Mark. So when I hear 48 units, 9 ping, 32 occupied, and I think, oh my God, there are the ghosts of most of the mistakes I've ever made in real estate, sitting right there in that property. So what did you see inside of this deal that made you think, wow, this could be a really good deal?
It's a unicorn deal. I could get the asset delivered to me empty, which would allow me to execute my value add very, very rapidly instead of playing my usual shell game of moving tenants around like I do in all my other deals. I could do it a building at a time, which is maximizing the efficiency of the construction process. So I smelled blood in the water right away and was just salivating getting my hands on this deal. Also, as soon as that guy signed that addendum, I knew I had him cornered. And he realized that about a month later. And he did everything he could to try to weasel out of the deal. And I just sort of snared at him and said, you try that, I'll sue you back to the Stone Age. You know, so I had the deal. And he legitimately, for a couple of months there, tried to get out of the deal any way he could. And we just had him cornered. And we sent our lawyer over there to talk it over with him. It's like, you really don't want to try this? So I knew I had a good deal. And I knew I had this guy cornered. The rents that they were charging, because it was a housing authority, was grossly under market. So that's what.
All right, hold on. Before we move on, I want to make a point. So the attorney that you sent over there, one thing I always tell people, because I've learned this from my own past, is whenever I need an attorney to influence somebody, or I'm going to get into a situation, you know, where I need where I might go into litigation, I always seek out the biggest SOB in the land, right? And I usually get that referral from the brokers. You know, I'll start asking brokers, who's the biggest SOB in the land that you wouldn't want to litigate it against? So is that what you did in that particular case?
No, I did something a little bit different, a little more.
Well, he had a prior relationship with those people.
That's right.
Yeah. Right.
With what people?
With the seller.
You had a prior relationship with the seller, Mark?
Yeah. So the attorney we used.
Yeah.
Had closed a couple of deals for this guy, including this asset previously.
Oh, but I see.
I had him under retainer. So
the
seller could not utilize his services, but that attorney was able to talk sense to that seller. So I didn't want to come in with my guns blaring.
Yeah.
It's always better to use sugar than vinegar, you know? So we just kept like prodding him on to do the right thing. And it took a lot of prodding with the seller to get him to do the right thing. But you know, look, I'm from Detroit. I can bring a big club to any deal and just kind of a jerk that way. But I have learned over the years, it's just better to try to negotiate and smooth it out and not use DEFCON 1 option. That's just like negotiate and talk this out.
Option of last resort.
Yeah. If I had to, I could have sued him, but I didn't want to. And I've never sued anybody in my life and I don't want to go
there. Right. Too much negative energy.
You're exactly right, Dave. It just sucks you dry and you know
it takes away the energy you could be doing deals and making more money.
That's exactly
I've always looked at it.
So we were just trying to coerce this guy and getting to the goal line.
Okay. I want to go to Odell. Explain to me the value add in this deal.
Well, the first value add was a poorly managed property. They were very inexperienced. They shouldn't have owned a multifamily in the first place.
Yeah.
And we just saw an opportunity to provide a quality asset to the tenants. We were going to do a lot of upgrades. I think they only upgraded maybe 2 or 3 units during the time period that they had it. They had a fire previously to us purchasing it. We knew about it. And they were still repairing those 4 units that were burned by fire.
So those units were down?
Yes, they were still down. They actually just got up back in, was it January?
Yeah.
You got the certificate, you know, occupancy, Fernanda?
Correct.
Yeah.
Fernanda, how many dollars per door are you putting in the upgrades?
$24,000
per door?
Yeah.
Yes.
Wow. Is this your first deal?
Yes.
Yes.
You definitely needed somebody like Mark to come in and either be a co-partner or a sponsor on a deal like that, because that's a ton. So Mark, you had to have a hand in determining what needed to be done, because that's a big figure. So explain that process of looking at this deal and then thinking, okay, this deal would warrant $24,000 per unit to put in, and then it's going to give me X amount of return.
Well, the first thing, you look at it from a macro level, and we looked at the marketplace. And specifically, when I go into a new market, I look for 2 things. I look for the vacancy rate in the marketplace, And then I go to the building department and I look for permit activity. And so the vacancy rate in this market in Vicksburg is sub 5%. There's nothing to rent. And then secondly, they hadn't had a new building permit filed for an apartment complex in like 4 or 5 years, and there was nothing in the pipeline. So I knew I had a very constrained supply, and that I could charge the sun, the moon, and the stars, and I can rent these places out. So the other thing that I knew about this building, it was legitimately like a DD- asset, just needed a lot of love. And that's what I specialize, Dave. I think you know that. I do a lot of heavy lifts on buildings. I've renovated thousands of units. And I knew that by investing that kind of money into this asset, it was a pretty good location, about a B location. I'd have one of the nicest products in all of Vicksburg. Mm-hmm. And I knew that just from previous experience that tenants will pay for a nice place to live if they perceive value. So to me, it is completely warranting of the investment because I'm really confident of the rents I'm going to get. I just got off the phone yesterday with my asset manager and we finalized the rents and we actually raised them again. It's stupid how much money we're going to make on this. We're going from an average of under 700 a door to an average of like 950. And that's just the average.
So you're going to increase rents a minimum of $250 per door? Is that what you're saying?
Absolutely. Yeah. We're going from an average of 696 to an average of 1,011.
Oh, wow. Okay. So that's four. Yeah. All right. Now, so people can have a time frame. You said you closed in March, and right now this is the beginning of May 2022. Yep. So that's 2 months. Had you already done the renovations on one? Because you had mentioned earlier that you're going to do a building at a time. Had you already completed the renovations on one building?
We haven't completed, but we've already demoed 25 units and we've demoed the leasing office, and that's already sheetrocked. And now we're going back because we changed the scope a little bit. So that should be done next week. And we're starting to bring units online, but hopefully this month we're going to start renting units. So I think we're going to get one whole building leased up and maybe another part of another one, but we're already going at it. We have about a 3-month timeline on the construction project.
All right. Before I ask the next question, I have to acknowledge our sponsor, which is Ultimate Partnering 2022, which will be held in October. And Ultimate Partnering is how these two met. Mark's been to several Ultimate Partnerings as well. That's where everybody gets together and we have a big powwow. And that's where you find money. That's where you find partners. That's where you find deals. And there's great education from the stage. And we haven't announced the keynote is, but it's going to be a big one. So Ultimate Partnering, you go to ultimatepartnering.com to get in on the early bird special. All right. So, Fernanda, explain to me the financing for this deal, because this is a construction deal, basically.
Yep. So we have a bridge loan for 75% of the purchase price, 100% of the renovations. The lender was a little bit of a challenge as well. And Mark will have to explain the relationship between the lending broker and the lender and how all that was set up. But ultimately, one of the hiccups we ran into during our lending process was they almost walked out on us on the deal at the 11th hour and said,
"Oh, geez."
Yeah. And I guess the lending broker and the lender fought it out overnight. I think what, Mark, they sent you an email at 11 o'clock at night saying they weren't going to do the deal. And Mark pushed back like, that's unacceptable. So ultimately we got it done. They ended up closing, but they lost our closing docs. They didn't take the reserves for our mortgage payment. What else did they do?
Yeah. So what do you need to say? They lost the closing docs after I had overnighted them. And they were sitting in a mail room in Charlotte, North Carolina for a week and they had no idea where they were.
Wow.
And a week before closing, they sent me an email and there's a mortgage broker. You go through them, you get to a conduit lender, and above them is the ultimate lender. And so the conduit lender and the ultimate lender is the one that said, we're not doing any more deals. We don't like this deal. And they pulled out. And so the conduit lender and this ultimate money source, they literally went at it for 3 days. Chairs flying over the conference room table, that sort of contentious negotiation. Ultimately, we got the deal done, but they raised the interest rate on the deal and one other condition.
I think we had to pay a point. I think they made
us. Yeah, they raised the interest rate a whole point just at the last minute, just because.
Wow.
You know, and it didn't matter because it's a short-term loan for us. We're going to refi in 6 months, so I don't care. But the other thing they did is right at the last, like a week before closing, we went out and raised a little bit of money for this deal. And we were going to bring that to the table as our equity stake. And usually got to put 10% of the equity down. So I was prepared to do that. But they said, no, we need you to season that money for 2 months. And I said, look, why are you telling me this a week before closing? Why the F didn't you call me and tell me that 2 months ago? Mm-hmm. So I had all this money sitting in a checking account for 2 months and I couldn't touch it. I had to personally scrape together $500,000 a week before closing to get the deal done. And I was just lucky I was liquid enough at that point in life to get it done. And I got reimbursed. I just took that investor money a day after closing. So I got reimbursed. But just to your listening audience, that was very stressful. So, you know, make sure you talk to your lender and find out how seasoned your investment dollars have to be before you go to the closing table, and make sure you're constantly communicating with your lender, because they just didn't do a good job communicating with us.
Yeah.
That's and I don't think they ever gave us like a stipulation sheet to say, you know what, we're approving you for this, and these are all the things that we need you to do to come to close. Like, they never provided that. We got an email we got an email from the lending broker with just the list that he typed up of things that we needed to close. And every time we satisfy a stipulation, something else would come up. And that happened all the way to closing day.
What was the name of the lender so everybody knows that?
I'm not going to say. You know,
She already said it. I don't mind doing that from stage because, you know, when people don't perform properly, it's just not right. It's just like if they didn't close, how much money would you have lost if they didn't close the deal?
We had probably upfront costs of 50+ grand.
50+ thousand. Then were you hard on your deposit?
Yeah.
At that point, yeah. So then it's probably upwards of 80.
Yeah. So I mean, if last minute they don't perform, you're screwed. That's why I don't have problem mentioning names like that. But hey, listen, I've got in my show notes that your equity partners are more like debt partners, and in 9 months you'd be able to refinance them out at a 9% return, and then you own the deal outright. Am I right on that? Can you explain how that works?
16%, actually.
Yeah,
16%.
Yeah, it was a 16% prep.
Okay. So you go to your money partner and you say, hey, how much was the raise, by the way?
$575,000.
Give me $575,000 and I will return that $575,000 in 9 months plus 16% and we're done. We kiss and we go on our way and hopefully we meet again for a second date.
Yep.
Is that right?
That's correct.
And they're like, okay, I'm in.
They were. They didn't, and Mark, correct me if I'm wrong, but they didn't want that was a investor who did not want to tie their money up for a long period of time. So it actually worked out perfect.
Yeah. The way I structured it, Dave, was that I paid them an IRR type of structure on the first 9 months.
Yeah.
So that allowed me, if we closed quicker, you know, we refi more quickly, their IRR would climb. So if we got it closed, say in month 7, the refi, the IRR for their loan would be more 20 to 25% because IRR is a time sensitive calculation. And it's such a short term loan that 1 month quicker has a pretty dramatic impact on the IRR.
Mm-hmm.
But then if we took longer, it just went to a straight 16% loan, a fixed interest loan. So I was able to conceptualize this in a way that worked, you know, it was a win-win for both parties. So we're highly incentivized to finish the deal faster,
no matter
what. And it's incentivized them to invest in the deal because they were looking at mid-20s kind of rate of return.
Is it just one investor? Or is it representative of a group?
It's three or four.
I think it's
three or four different investors.
Yeah. So it's structured as a syndication for the first 9 months and then a fixed loan afterwards.
Yeah. So the reason I'm asking that question is, first of all, you have to come up with the concept of, okay, I'm going to go after more like a debt structure,
right.
Number one. Number two, we're going to be able to refinance the investors out with a pop. Right. So then you got to think to yourself, well, first of all, how did you come up with that particular structure? Why did you structure it like that? And I'm assuming, Mark, it was your idea.
Yeah.
So why that particular structure for this?
Because, look, you've been here, you know, in this business, you're doing deal after deal after deal, but the last one you do is your cash flow deal that pays you the annuity for life. And I'm at that point where I'm looking like get an annuity going on so I can retire as a practicing architect. That was one thing. The other thing is this is just such a unicorn deal. I knew it was going to cash flow. So it wasn't big enough to have a big syndication going on. So I had to like think of a structure that would get me the money I needed to get the deal done and allow people to get out, because all these investors I had, they wanted a quick in and out. They just wanted a quick place to park their money.
Yeah.
But they weren't necessarily looking to have it tied up for 3 to 5 years.
So you basically segmented your investors out to the ones that you thought would do this deal.
That's exactly right.
Yeah. Awesome.
Yeah.
All right, good. I'm going to end the podcast right now, and we're going to go to a Q&A for those of you that are with us live. So this has been another edition of Multifamily Deal Lab. And join us again next week, same time, same channel, and we will dissect another deal. Thanks, everybody.
This has been another edition of Multifamily Deal Lab. If watching on YouTube, please be sure to hit the like button, the subscribe button, so you don't miss the next session, and review the contact links on this page.